Charles Allen Wright, and the announcement, a total surprise.
I've just informed Judge Sirica that President Nixon will comply in all respects with the order of this court as modified by the Court of Appeals.
After firing the Watergate Special Prosecutor, Archibald Cox, abolishing his office and precipitating the resignations of the Attorney General and the Deputy Attorney General, President Nixon suddenly this afternoon reversed himself and agreed to obey the appeals court order and make those tapes of presidential conversations available to Judge Sirica. Friday, in the decision that led up to the weekend events, Mr. Nixon had offered only summaries of the tapes prepared by himself and checked by Democratic Senator Stennis. The reversal today explained by Professor Wright.
The president on Friday made what he thought, what Attorney General Richardson thought, what I thought, was a very reasonable proposal to accommodate the spirit of the court's order with the least intrusion of presidential confidentiality and bring a constitutional crisis to an end. It was obvious that the constitutional crisis was not over, that even if, as I hope he would have, Judge Sirica had accepted the presentation that we had planned to make as satisfactory compliance, there would have been those who would have said that the president is defying the law. This president does not defy the law.
Those tape recordings, of course, include several conversations with John Dean, which the former White House counsel charged showed Mr. Nixon's awareness of the Watergate cover-up. At the White House, late this afternoon, the president's chief of staff, General Alexander Haig, said the tapes would vindicate the president. And Haig said the decision on turning over the tapes had been made this morning, after what Haig referred to as an unforeseen firestorm of events.
The president concluded, after very painful and anguishing discussions with me, with his counsel, that the circumstances were sufficiently grave in the context of our national attitudes on this issue, which I must say, in my view, have been subject to a great deal of misunderstanding, a great deal of misinformation over the past weekend. But in the light of this situation, the president decided that he would abandon, on this occasion, his very strongly held and long-held conviction that he, as president of these United States, has the obligation, indeed, to protect the rights and prerogatives of this office, not only for himself, but for subsequent presidents in our upcoming history.
The firestorm, the reaction to Cox's ouster and the Justice Department departures, had the House of Representatives receiving its first serious impeachment proposals in over 100 years. Democratic Representative Jerome Waldy of California dropped in the first resolution at 12 minutes past noon today as the House reconvened. And Speaker Carl Albert said, in the cause of orderly procedure, the Judiciary Committee would begin a preliminary study of the possible grounds.
For the Congress to act in a hasty and reckless manner would, in my judgment, further engender disunity. Resolutions calling for impeachment have been introduced in the House of Representatives today. These resolutions have been referred to the House Committee on the Judiciary, the appropriate committee under the rules of the House.
The extent of the support for impeachment was still unclear, but some Democrats, such as Senator George McGovern, were now seeing impeachment as perhaps not the worst thing that could hit the country.
Considering the performance of the government over the past 9 months, it may well be that impeachment, far from damaging our political system, is the best method of restoring public confidence in that system. It could dispel the dark clouds over the White House, either by vindicating the president's claim of innocence or by replacing him with one who will heed the obligations of the Constitution.
There was a strong move in the Senate Judiciary Committee to force the reinstatement of some kind of independent special prosecutor. And at the same time today, former Attorney General Elliot Richardson and former Deputy Attorney General William Ruckelshaus were holding news conferences, each defending the president, but each also defending Cox and their commitment to his independence. Richardson and then Ruckelshaus also saying there still should be an independent prosecutor. We hear Ruckelshaus.
I believe that it's necessary for the people to believe, when this investigation is over, that it has been thorough and that it has been fair and that it has been vigorous. And the only way I see of accomplishing that is to create some special investigative process to ensure that this happens. This could be done either through the courts themselves or by the Congress.
The news of the decision to turn over the tapes came while Ruckelshaus was still meeting with newsmen. He was immediately asked to comment on that and whether a special prosecutor would now be needed.
Well, I'm very glad to see that the president has complied, and I certainly applaud his action in doing so. I think it remains to be seen to what extent the investigation that was being carried on by the special prosecutor's office in other areas, other than the area that was involved in the Watergate investigation here, can carry forward, and where there are compelling circumstances, as I think there were in the Watergate issue, whether the tapes or memoranda or notes or documents that are relevant to that given issue can be made available through judicial process.
It was that issue, the other documents Cox was trying to obtain from the White House in regard to other investigations, which also cropped up when Richardson, much later, hailed the president's decision in an interview with Bernard Shaw.
I personally have felt that his reluctance has always been motivated by a concern for the protection of the principle of presidential confidentiality rather than by a worry about what the tapes would disclose.
Will this still the cause for impeachment on the Hill?
I hope it does. I think it certainly should. There may, of course, be other questions down the road as to the availability of other tapes or documents, but I hope that these will be resolved on the same basis, and should that be so, then it would completely eliminate the problem, it seems to me.
On Capitol Hill, Republican Senator Barry Goldwater greeted the news of the tapes reversal with a thank God, and added, in effect, that it was about time.
Had he done this 3 months ago, the Watergate matter would be all through and dried up and forgotten. I have a feeling that his action today will calm down the American people who are still rather riled up about this.
Congressman Jerome Wally, author of that first impeachment resolution, said it was not yet time to declare the matter resolved.
That does not cause me to conclude that the necessary impeachment process should be forsaken. I personally believe that the House should continue its inquiry as to whether the president has in fact committed impeachable offenses.
We brought in our Watergate experts, Daniel Shore and Justice Department correspondent Fred Graham, for some reflection on legal and other aspects of today's surprises. I suppose, gentlemen, the first question might be, why did the president apparently capitulate after sacrificing an attorney general and a deputy attorney general?
Well, Neil, there's going to be a lot of speculation about that, and I think we'll probably have a little more perspective on it in a few days, but it seems that it was a combination of two elements, one being that the lawyers were probably telling the president that Judge Sirica, as he indicated in court today, was going to insist on the tapes themselves. He had a decision from the Court of Appeals saying that he had a right to the tapes, and he made it clear he was going to demand the tapes. That could mean that the president would be held in contempt, and that's ground for impeachment. And two, we're being told here that more telegrams have come in to Washington, D.C. protesting this than over any issue in recent years. And I think the combination of the legal and political pressures on the president with the specter of impeachment hovering right over the horizon did the trick.
Could I add a third point to that? Bill Safire, former presidential speechwriter, now a columnist in the New York Times, suggested yesterday that the president might cave in on the tapes and that his main objective was to get rid of Archibald Cox. That he apparently has done. The irony of the whole situation is that he has now given the tapes that were in dispute as a subject that caused him to have Cox fired and to lose his attorney general and deputy attorney general. The correspondence that now has been revealed by Cox with Richardson, by Richardson with the president, also makes it clear that beyond the tapes, there is an issue that apparently is much more important to the president, and that is certain documents, a memorandum that Cox wanted that the president had dictated after one of the conversations, memoranda that may have dealt with the affair of B.B. Rebozo, who received $100,000 from Howard Hughes. And it may very well be now that by concentrating on the tapes, building up the entire peak of public demand on the tapes, and then yielding the tapes, that the president might hope A, to have gotten away with firing Cox, and B, with not having attention focused on the other document.
And I think the key to whether or not that will work, as perhaps the White House strategist hoped, Dan and Neil, is that whether or not there is a new independent prosecutor, it seems that probably the Justice Department simply is not going to press the president for these documents. If there is a new special counsel appointed by Judge Sirica for the grand jury or some other independent prosecutor, then we may be right back in the thick of this in just a few weeks, but over some other presidential conversation or document.
That's right. The whole issue now focuses on who is there to ask for these documents, since we can assume that the acting attorney general, Professor Bork, is not likely to and is not likely to encourage Henry Peterson, his assistant, to ask for them. Who will fill the place of the now absent Archibald Cox? One way is, as you suggested, that the judge could decide to appoint somebody to guard the interests of the grand jury. There, another way is now being considered in the Senate Judiciary Committee, which is meeting in executive session tomorrow morning. Proposals have been made by a group of liberals, headed by Senators Hart and Kennedy, that by statute, an office of special prosecutor, totally independent from the executive branch, should be created. Senator Kennedy admits that there are constitutional difficulties in doing it, and they're trying to staff that out.
We should make plain, I think, that the appeals court decision that the president is now obeying applies only to those tape recordings, not to any part of the documents, right?
That's correct. There were two documents that were included in the original subpoena, but those were supplied without great difficulty, so that the issue became the tapes, and by yielding the tapes, the president, albeit several days after the expiration of the deadline, has now apparently complied with that order. But the question is whether it will be further ordered.
And there had yet been no request by Archibald Cox for the documents from the court.
No, well, he had asked them from the White House and hadn't gotten them, as he explained at his news conference last Saturday, and he was preparing to file subpoenas asking for them, and it was an attempt to get him not to ask for them. That played an important part in the negotiations with him, and it appears from the correspondence that his refusal to lay off asking for those documents contributed to his discharge.
Not just his objection to halting the court action in regard to the tapes.
No, I now am forced to conclude, after a study of the documents that have been released, that the memos that he wanted may have played an important part, a more important part, in the minds of those at the White House who were orchestrating this entire thing than what happened to the tapes themselves.
Fred, do you get that feel from the Justice Department or the prosecutor's office?
Yes, you do get it. You don't get it from the Justice Department. The Justice Department is playing this whole thing very cozy. But over at the Archibald Cox's old office, where, of course, everyone but Cox is still on board, The atmosphere is very, very guarded. I would say it ranges between guarded to pessimistic. The attitude seems to be this, that each of those investigators is going to press forward with his or her investigation. That is, perhaps some of these others that were maybe striking closer to home at the White House and the outside world knew. And then the monkey will be on the Justice Department's back to permit them to go ahead exactly as they would if Archibald Cox had been there, or to step in and put a stop to it. And at that point, there will be more resignations and I would think more public heat directed at the White House.
Our thanks to Fred Graham and Daniel Shore for those reflections. Let's call in Robert Pierpoint from the White House now. Bob, we're hearing some explanations from the White House for this decision today, are we not?
Yes, we are, Neil. We've had both General Alexander Haig, the president's chief of staff, and Professor Charles Wright, his chief legal advisor, talking to us late this afternoon and giving their version of what has happened during this past stormy week.
And what is that version?
Well, basically, it seems to be that they felt, and the president felt, that in view of the terrible domestic crisis the country faced, and in view also of the Middle East crisis, and they didn't hesitate to bring that in frequently, that the president decided he had to act. He had to remove this stain from his own personal record and remove the problem from the body politic. So the president decided to find a compromise, in their words, and Archibald Cox, the special prosecutor, would not accept the compromise. And when Cox explained the whole thing to the public misunderstood and blamed the president. And apparently Mr. Richardson and Mr. Ruckelshaus also felt caught in the middle to some extent, Cox and the president, so they also resigned. And as a result of all of this, the president felt the situation was much worse than he had anticipated. They admit here there was some degree of miscalculation of public reaction. So today the president, in order to right all of these wrongs, decided to surrender the tapes.
And Bob, what do you think we can hear from the president when he speaks to the nation tomorrow night?
I think we'll hear very much of what we've heard already today from General Haig and Professor Wright, namely that the president felt he found an honest compromise, that somehow it was misinterpreted by Cox, Richardson, and Ruckelshaus, and eventually it was misconstrued to the public, and that basically he feels that he did the right thing, but in view of the domestic crisis that erupted, he decided he had to surrender the tapes.
And again, likely another appeal to stop wallowing in Watergate, as he once said, and get on with the nation's business.
I'm sure he'll ask the country to look ahead and not backward.
I think we neglected to say the president speaks to the nation at 9 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time tomorrow night. From Robert Pierpoint, we move on to Bruce Morton, who's been covering the events at the House today, before and after the decision announced to Judge Sirica to turn over those tapes. Bruce, do you think that that decision has taken the steam out of the impeachment move?
Oh, I think there's no question, Neil, that it's taken a lot of the steam out. I must say the tapes were not the only grievance that the authors of these various impeachment resolutions felt they had against the president. The tapes were not the only charge leveled. People have talked about the abolition of the office of the special prosecutor. Some congressmen felt that that was a case of the president breaking his promise to the Congress and the guidelines that came out when Elliot Richardson was being confirmed as Attorney General. And there were a long list of other specifics. I suppose Majority Leader Tip O'Neill summed it up about as accurately as anyone. He said after the news spread this afternoon that obviously this had dampened enthusiasm for impeachment, but that there were so many other particulars, so many other charges against the president in one resolution or another, that the Judiciary Committee would have to go ahead and conduct the investigation it said it was going to conduct to see whether grounds for impeachment exist.
When do you expect the committee to begin this study?
Well, I suspect that the president's decision to release the tapes has taken a lot of the urgency out of that. I think the committee now may be more concerned with its other current major responsibility, which is confirming or not confirming Gerald Ford as a vice presidential nominee. Speaker Albert has said all along, said again this morning before the president's decision was announced, that he hoped action on Ford would come before any possible action on impeachment. He feels personally embarrassed that the political position that puts him in at any implication that a Democratic Congress would be trying to slip a Democrat into the White House.
He being next in line right now with no vice president.
Yes. So he has hoped all along that they would act on Ford first, which would, in his view, make it clear that any impeachment move would be not political, at least not in the obvious get one of our guys in sense. So I think the chances for that have improved, and whether this grounds for impeachment investigation is pro forma or is anything more than that depends, I suppose, on a couple of things, Neil. One, whether some new bombshell bursts over the beleaguered Dixon White House, and Lord knows this city is full of rumors in that direction, as it always is. And the other, and I suppose the most important, is simply public opinion, that Congress is not dying to have a big fight with the president. They don't all want to run out and impeach the man. They would do it only if they felt the voters back home were shouting for it.
How much support did it really have? Certainly the headline was the charge the president was not obeying the law by not turning the tapes over to the courts.
Well, I don't know how you can count votes exactly. I think that very few people wanted an impeachment vote today. There was a House procedure under which that could have been arranged, but nobody really wanted that. There was considerable support for the idea that the Judiciary Committee ought to take a look at it, and if things kept getting worse, maybe you'd really have to get serious about it. If you just want me to pick a number, I'll do it, because nobody can ever prove I'm wrong, and it didn't happen. If there'd been a debate and a vote on impeaching the president today, I would say that 75 congressmen might have voted for it. 65, 75, somewhere in that range.
I think we ought to keep our eye on the move in the Senate Judiciary Committee to pass legislation which would require a special prosecutor, which could be the next major issue arising here.
There's a good deal of support for that, Neil, both in the House and the Senate. Dan Shore talked about
for the young liberal group on the Senate Judiciary Committee, Bayh and Kennedy, Hart. There's also some congressional support. John Moss of California was one of those with a statement out today saying that that's what Congress ought to do. There are a number of variations on the idea. Does the man report to the Congress? Does the man report to the courts? The one thing everybody agrees on is that he does not report to the president, since that raises all the problems that the Cox faced.
The government investigating himself.
Indeed.
Himself.
And there are some legal and constitutional objections to that, which I am not lawyer enough to try to untangle. Mr. Rodino, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, is one of those who feels that perhaps the Congress lacks the authority to set up what, in effect, would be an executive agency reporting to the Congress that way.
I can tell you that the staffs of the members of the Senate Judiciary Committee were working all day on that legal problem, and we may hear something of their version when they meet in executive session tomorrow.
Well, you got a few good staff people working to figure out an explanation for anything.
I think in any case, Bruce, we can say that President Nixon and his decision today to turn over those tape recordings to Judge Sirica has stepped back from the brink again of whatever confrontation he was approaching with the Congress. This has been a CBS News special report, The President and the Watergate Tapes. With thanks to my Washington colleagues, Bruce Morton, Robert Pierpoint, Fred Graham, and Daniel Shore, I'm Neil Strauser, CBS News.